Okay, so today is the 23rd of March, and it's Bridget Brownlow interviewing Pat Crowley about his experiences as a student at St. Mary's. Hello, Pat.
Bridget.
Thanks very much for agreeing to meet with me.
Okay.
What I'd like to get started is to ask you for your place of birth.
Yeah.
And your educational experience, or your educational history.
Okay, I was born in St. John's, Newfoundland, February 21st, 1950. I came here to St. Mary's in September of 68.
So you were 18.
18.
And why did you choose St. Mary's?
That's an easy one. I was, for some reason, maybe I think my parents wanted to get me in a strict environment, whatever. But anyways, I was accepted at St. Evex first. And then my father, who was from Ireland, he went to the Jesuits in Ireland. I went to the Jesuits in St. John's. And he just said one day, he said, look, I think let's apply to St. Mary's because that's a Jesuit school. You go to the Jesuits now, and I have great respect for the Jesuits. Let's apply to St. Mary's. And back in those days in St. John's, the Catholic kids went to St. Evex or St. Mary's, or St. Dunstan's at the time also. And the Catholic girls went to Mount St. Vincent, and the Protestants went to Acadia or Mount Allison.
So there was no Catholic University in Newfoundland?
No, there was Memorial.
Right.
And I think my mom, they wanted to send me to a smaller university and like that. So anyways, when he wrote the application letter to St. Mary's, a personal letter came back from Kevin Cleary.
Hmm.
And it's a funny story, actually, because Kevin was the registrar at the time.
Yes.
And my father was a family doctor in St. John's, and he was looking after his parents.
Really?
And he knew the family well.
Right.
So he said, so when he got this personal letter, he said, oh, that's settled. He said, that's where you're going, to St. Mary's.
Yes.
Because he said, I know this family and this and that. Anyway, well, I came up with my father, and the first person we met was Mr. Cleary. and his office at the back there. And at that time, there was a big mound of dirt you could see from his office, and this was the football stadium being built.
Right,
so they were just starting that then. And so the funny story is that Kevin, we became friends after that. And his, the day we got married, his wife was having her last baby, their sixth child, the same day. So they couldn't come to the wedding. What happened was when I went on the board, at the Board of Governors as the alumni rep, he was already on as alumni rep, and
right.
I said, "Well, now, Mr. Clear, what do I do? Do I have to introduce myself or something?" He said, "No, listen," he said, "I looked after you your first day at St. Mary's. I'm going to look after you your first day on the board." what really makes this story come around is, my daughter, when she was doing her practice teaching, she was at a school and she was talking about Mr. Cleary, who was her teacher. So my wife said, ask him if his birthday is December 16th, 1972. And she said, why? And she came back. It was Mr. Cleary's son. So the whole thing came
full circle.
My daughter
learning
her teaching career from.
So that's
a little St. Mary's story, but that's how I ended up coming, and that was 1968.
Okay.
And at that time, the old, what we call the old residence, which was the wing of McNally.
The north wing?
Yeah, the north wing was still in operation. The dining hall for the first term was still in the main McNally building.
Okay.
And
where was the dining hall?
The fourth floor, the top floor.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it wasn't called the McNally then, it was just the admin building, the main building.
Oh, okay.
And then I was the first one in the low rise. I was the first one in the high rise one, which was Rice now. And then my second term of my first year, so January of 69, they opened up the dining hall.
Right, okay,
so,
the actual cafeteria.
Yeah.
So there must have been a kitchen up there in McNally then, right?
Oh yeah, the top floor. So you have to remember, there was two residences. There was the Jesuits were there also on the south wing.
Right, the Jesuits were the south wing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so when I have alumni come into the office and they say, like, were there that many Jesuits here? Well, yeah. Number one, you have to remember that the Jesuits weren't bunking two to three to a room. They had their own room.
Right, of course.
And they would have their own private bathroom, shower, or, you know, bathroom.
Yeah.
And they had a little study.
Right.
And because I have to, one of the old yearbooks has the architecture plans. And they had a common room on every floor. They had their own chapel. They had their own dining hall. So
right.
It was pretty easy to fill that out. But
yeah.
Still, in back from the mid to late 70s, there were still 20, 25 to 30 Jesuits here.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I'll bring you
still
over.
Still living over there?
Oh, yeah, and teaching.
And teaching.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know some of them, I guess, that I would have seen through the other oral histories. Larry Murphy and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when my first year here, the president was still a Jesuit.
Lavelle, that was Father Lavelle, right,
yeah.
Okay.
And,
right.
And there was a lot of Jesuit professors here.
Wow.
But when I say there was 25 to 30 Jesuits, they weren't like old retired Jesuits.
They were active.
They were active PhDs, full-fledged professors. And, and also... the old timers would tell you when the high school was here, there was more Jesuits because they had what they called Jesuit scholastics that would teach in the high school.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so, what was your? Had you come here with your father to see the campus before
you
arrived?
No, okay. No, it's the first time.
So, what do you remember from your
well,
arrive here?
We just asked the hotel how to get to St. Mary's, and they told us, and we walked down, and I was amazed, but. Then my father just left me on my own for registration and that.
Yes.
And funny thing is, in registration, you know, I was nervous, didn't know anybody.
No.
And then I heard a voice and was one of the priests, one of the Jesuits from my high school.
Was it really?
Who just got transferred into St. Mary's.
And
so
what
was
his name?
Father Conlon.
Father Conlon.
And he was our guidance counselor at my high school. And he was in, and I think he was guidance counselor here. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And he got transferred in from Gonzaga. And then... getting into residence, I think the big thing was I was meeting people from everywhere.
Right.
You know, like growing up in St. John, St. John's, you know, it's an island.
Yes.
You don't get to see many people.
Yes.
And my roommate was a black guy from Newark, New Jersey, who came up here to play basketball.
Right.
And of course, in Newfoundland, we there is no black population
no.
in Newfoundland, so this was all new to me.
Yes.
There was an awful lot of Americans here at that time.
Right, yes.
And for various reasons. Number one, the Vietnam War was on.
Yeah.
So they were up here, well, there's for student deferments to get away from the draft. But a lot of them had just come from Vietnam also.
Mm-hmm.
So that. But the big thing about the Americans that people fail to realize is this was a cheap Jesuit education.
Right, okay.
And you know, I get this a lot from when I go down to the New England states from the older alumni. Like they'll tell you this, that like St. Mary's, as a Jesuit university, there's certain standards and requirements that a Jesuit university has to have.
Mm-hmm.
So a degree from St. Mary's was equal to a degree from Gonzaga or Georgetown or Boston College or Holy Cross, same thing, because they had those certain standards. It's like the Sacred Heart Convent schools.
Yes.
They have certain standards they have to abide by.
Yeah.
So for the Catholic families in New England, this was a cheap Jesuit education.
Oh, right,
and
right.
It was a good degree to go back to the United States with,
right.
was a degree from a Jesuit university.
Right, it's interesting,
so people, that people don't realize that the big role that the Jesuits played here.
That's right, that's a very important, that's a very important observation.
You know, and not only in, like, and they had leeway, you know, like if a student didn't have the money to make it, they would
help
they'd, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So, okay, so you were, so there you have Father Conlon saying hi to you.
And then 2 days before, or 3 or 4 days before graduation, they turned co-ed. That was the other thing.
Right.
So, but there was only, you'd have to check the records, but I think there was only 4 or 5 girls that registered the first year.
In 68.
In 68.
Yeah, so you arrived right at the same time that they were...
Went co-ed.
That they went, yes.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is that Sacred Heart had a junior college then.
Yeah.
And Mount St. Vincent was a university. They used to... girls from those universities would come down and take classes at St. Mary's. Now, you knew who the Sacred Heart girls were because of the school uniforms they had to wear. But the girls from... So, when you saw... girls around campus, you or I shouldn't say girls, I should say co-heads, they were saying you didn't know if they were secretaries or from the mount or wherever because there were so few of them.
Right.
And the
right.
next year thing came in droves, of course.
Yes.
But the first year.
In 69. In 69 they were here in droves.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah.
So you noticed a big difference between.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I found out the reason why. And because I can remember asking Kevin Cleary this just before he died, about a year or so before he died. And I said, what was the reason why they turned co-ed? And he said, the reason was they knew they were going to go co-ed. But the president of Mount St. Vincent said at the time, she said, if you go co-ed now, you'll ruin my registration. This was back in, say, in the winter of 08. You'll ruin my registration. So if you announce it just before it happens, and then I can get prepared for 69-70.
Right.
But to announce it now, because as you know, universities in the winter are planning for their September registration.
So that was Catherine Wallace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah, Mother Wallace, yeah. So she said, you'll ruin our registration.
Yes.
But I know it's coming, but give me 18 months instead of, you know, 6 months.
Were you aware of part of my study is looking at this series of failed negotiations between St. Mary's and the Mount? Would you have been aware of any?
No.
Any of those? No. Those would predate your time. I mean, they would have been started around 64,
63. Oh, no, I didn't know. But I do know that when the girls came, or when it co-ed in 69, like half of the residents, half the low-rise was women's residents. And they were the real trailblazers because you have to remember, this university was built for men.
Yes, that's
so,
right.
So there's all kinds of little things like, if they went to the gym, there was no changing rooms.
Right.
Little things like that, you know. There was no public washrooms for them.
Yeah.
You know, everything was built for men.
Yeah. I will be interviewing Anne McGilvery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
she was here when I was here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was a residence don.
Yep. Yeah.
What do you call the female one? A don?
Yeah,
don too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So she'll have an interesting perspective on that. So what was it like? I mean, so obviously you said it was difficult to figure out sort of where the girls might have been from. There were such few numbers.
There was so few of them. You had one or two, and you may have one in your class.
Okay.
And I think I had one in my class, but there was, you know, four or five co-eds among all those males.
Yes.
You know. But the big thing to me, like getting back, like I remember the excitement of football season.
Yes.
You know, like back then, you know, kids today, they work 3 or 4 jobs just to get through school. So they don't go to the games like we did.
Yes.
But Saturday afternoon, that was a big thing to go to the football games. And that was exciting.
Yes.
And the school rivalries between St. Mary's and St. Evex, and the city rivalry between Dal and St. Mary's with sports.
Yes.
And we went to all the games. You know, that was part of university life.
Yeah.
Now, granted, we lived in residence, so it was thing, but still, we embraced
that.
And everything was on campus.
Nice.
They didn't have a pub on campus, but the drinking age was 21 then. So, you know, if we got any beer or anything in the room, we had one of the older guys got it for us.
Right.
But that was, but still, there was no pub on campus. You probably couldn't get into, so everything was done on campus.
Yeah.
They had dances on campus. Everything was, you know, and, you know, if you went to the Halifax Shopping Center, that was a bus ride.
Right,
that was the other end of town.
What was the name of the pub out there that people would go to?
The Green Dory.
That
was
Dory?
Long after I left. that was long after I left St. Mary. The big pubs when I was here was the Midtown, the Derby, and the Piccadilly.
And the Piccadilly.
And the Lord Nelson.
And the Lord, right.
Lord Nelson, because it was so close. It was the closest one. But Spring Garden Road was the extent of our, that was it. That was the border.
Yeah.
You know, because we could walk to Spring Garden Road and back.
Yes.
But if you didn't have a car, you had to get on a bus to get out to the shopping center.
Right,
and that was really a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything, like I said, everything was on campus.
Now, would you have considered yourself a conservative sort of student when you arrived? And I'm putting that in the context of
the hippie
thing?
Hippies
and all that.
When I arrived, Yeah, I was into the rock and roll like everybody was. Like I was 14 when the Beatles came out.
Right.
So that was the age that you started to listen to pop music and things like this. So but of course, every kid, we all wanted to have our hair long then, but we weren't allowed.
Right.
You know, we weren't allowed in high school to grow hair long,
No.
And your parents didn't allow you to grow your hair long.
No.
So then when I came home at Christmas with hair down to here and the mustache, that was everybody, what happened to him? Yeah. And I don't know, maybe the mustache came my second year, maybe I wasn't old enough to grow one my first year, but the hair was long. And I still get things of my yearbook when people look at it and they see me with the long hair and the big mustache, and I said, wait, no, I went and got a haircut for that picture. But that everybody had long hair then.
Right, okay.
So yeah, that was interesting. That's a good point, because
it's a cultural thing
and
going on.
There was a whole thing, and when every time you turned on the television, there was always university demonstrations.
Right.
Especially in the United States,
yes,
because of the anti-war demonstrations.
Yes.
So you got your left wing or your people that wanted to demonstrate here, and they demonstrate against anything because they felt like, we got to do this too.
Right.
Everybody else is doing it. And at that time, we didn't have a Aramark. There was a man called a German guy, Heinz Morstadt, and he had the catering contract here.
Okay.
So he looked after the food and that. And we all thought he was great. It was institutional food. It wasn't like your mother's cooking, but it was pretty good.
Yes.
And what happened was, we had this big demonstration protesting about the quality of the food. And then all the residence kids were looking and said, we're not protesting. It was all the day guys. We couldn't understand. Like, here we're having a big march against poor Mr. Morstadt. And all the people marching went home to mom's cooking. And we had to go up and felt so sorry for him. We had to go up and get supper that night. And we didn't know if he's going to throw something in it. But there was no resident students out protesting. But it was that was the thing. They'd protest against anything.
That's hilarious.
And then our second year, the big protest, they had a strike our second year.
Did they?
And you know what that was about?
Was that 69?
69. Okay. Fall of 69. And there was a curfew in residence. Okay, for having women in the rooms.
Right.
And I forget the details. I think it was 10 o'clock on weeknights. And midnight on weekends, or 1 in the morning on weekends, or something like that. And then women had to be out of the rooms. And this came into forefront when the high rise one came, because there was apartments there.
Mm.
Before it was just rooms, but now you had rooms with kitchens and living rooms and things like that.
Fancy.
So you could have parties in a proper apartment.
Yes.
And so then all of a sudden the big protest was on, and this, I think, it was actually a strike, and they wanted to have 24 hours. So if, I think that's what it was, 24 hours or on the weekends.
So when you say strike, how do you mean? Like, what were
they? They didn't go to class. now Father Lavelle was still the president then.
Yes.
So the poor Jesuits didn't know how to handle this, because you had females in the residence, and I think it did get changed. I think it got changed to 24 hours. But
isn't that fast? I just want to touch on what you said about, I'd heard from someone that Father Lavelle really struggled a lot with the student,
outrage
and criticisms and all of that.
Yeah. Now, I was 19 or 20 years old at the time, but I heard that, and you could see it in, like he was flabbergasted when this student strike went on about the curfews and residence and that, because they came from a structured environment.
Yes.
They weren't faced with this before.
The And I said, that's right. And yeah. I suppose in some of the oral histories that I've read at the Mount, the sisters would have been struggling with the same thing.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. And often of interest to you might be just the, there are always comparisons made to what they had at St. Mary's. They had a better salad bar at St. Mary's, or they had better hours
at
St.
Right?
Mary's.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
The girls would complain
well,
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we, I can remember my first year going, getting on the bus to go out to dances out there, out at the Mount.
Did you really?
Yeah.
What was the atmosphere like out there?
Oh, it was great. The bus load, bus came in from St. Mary's. You know, they were almost like out in a hill. You got like Halifax was pretty big then.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You know what I mean? Big.
Really,
it seemed big.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, but to get out from St. Mary's to Mount St. Vincent was quite something.
Right.
You know? So, you know. And I can remember the nuns from the Sacred Heart phoning our residents for like they needed dates for the convent formals.
Did they really?
Oh yeah, and they would phone us for
Ooh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay. So by the time the women arrived in 69, did you notice that really, you know, anything that you can remember about that?
Oh yeah, it made a big difference.
Did it?
Yeah, yeah. Because see, my first year. I always think of my 4 years at St. Mary's as like, how do I say, as part of the old and part of the new.
Yes, you really were,
you know,
were
like
you?
I got the tail end of the old school.
Yes, you did.
I got the tail end of the, you know, I didn't live in the old residence, but I had friends that were over there. So I know what those rooms looked like. I was in them.
Yes.
I ate in the old cafeteria, even though it was only one term, but it was there.
Yeah.
The Jesuits were there. It was the last year of the old school, of the all-male school, I mean.
Yes.
And then your upperclassmen, you would hear their stories of how they had to go to mass every day.
Right.
And how they had to wear a sports coat and tie to class
yes.
every day and things like that. This
yeah.
And these were only guys who... 2 or 3 years ahead of you.
Yes.
So this
yes.
was, I was in the midst of all that change. So the first year, it felt like a small school.
Yeah.
And residence was like the low rise and a couple of floors of the new. And it felt like a small school. It was all male. You know, you had that, I don't know, macho type thing. You know, we're St. Mary's. You know,
mm-hmm.
We got the best football team, the best hockey team, or a bunch of guys, you know, like this. Then the next year we came in and all these girls were here.
Right.
And then that whole high rise was filled
yes.
with students. So
big changes.
Student population jump.
Yes,
you know,
it's right.
In residence. Now, they closed the old residence, but still they filled that whole new one.
Yeah.
You know, and took in... Two houses. It was A and B house of girls. So when you think of that, that was a big change. But I think the biggest change, being in residence, was going into the cafeteria every day and seeing all the co-eds,
right?
All the women, and having women in your classes, and you know, like, and then all of a sudden, you didn't have to go to Mount St. Vincent or to Conflict to get a date. They were right there. You know what I mean? And then it just snowballed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a big change, and it was a bigger change for the seniors.
Was it?
Yeah, because they went
that's
through first,
right,
second,
right.
third year, and then their last year. Oh.
Now, this is of quite a special interest to
yeah.
me. Did you know of anyone, or were you aware of anyone being fellow students or faculty or staff
yeah.
who were not supportive of the women coming, who would have complained
not,
about
no.
it?
No.
No.
No. Not that I can remember.
Okay.
And you got to remember, like, I'm in a residence, so I would have only, you know. And you got to remember, just about 99.9% of the guys were glad to have women.
Oh, right.
There,
yes, that's right. And it's interesting that I've heard from a few other people that I've interviewed,
yeah.
from some of those women
yeah.
themselves, they were happy to be here, too.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, yeah. They
yeah.
quite enjoyed.
Oh, I can remember one guy
and,
telling me his sister came in a year behind, you know, came in 69, and he was saying she can't wait to get here.
Yeah.
He said, and all her friends can't wait. Why not? You know, like all these guys, you know, they came in droves. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you meet your wife here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. She was at the Sacred Heart Convent, and the first dance I ever went to at St. Mary's, they were in the old gym.
Yes.
And they would have live bands and big dances. And when I went in, there was a friend of mine from St. Mary's, and from St. John's, I mean, he was there. And we went in, and I saw her. And back in Newfoundland those days, they didn't have grade 12.
Right.
So a lot of Catholic girls went to the Sacred Heart.
Yes.
For grade 12 or went there for high school. So I saw her and I asked her for a dance, and she said she went to the Sacred Heart Convent. And a lot of my sister's friends went there, so I started mentioning, make small talk.
Yes.
The friends of my sister, one of them happened to be her roommate.
Oh, okay.
And then the next year, getting back to that grade 12 story, my sister went there because she was too young to go to university.
Okay.
So I'd go down and visit my sister and see my wife a lot. And then my third year, I started dating her.
Okay.
But I met her at the first dance I ever went to.
Isn't that interesting?
Because she used to come down here quite a bit.
Did she?
The convent girls would come down here and quite a bit. And she was from Cuba, and there was a Spanish priest here who spent time in Cuba during the revolution.
Yes.
And she used to come down visiting him a lot. And
so what brought her, and this is a bit of a side track, but what brought her from Cuba to Halifax?
She was, her family was supposed to leave, then her brother's, the military age changed, so they had to stay. So she had her visa, and she went to New York to live with an aunt, and her aunt was single and living by herself and working two jobs and didn't want to leave her in an apartment in Manhattan by herself, so she sent her to boarding school here, which was the Sacred Heart.
Wow.
And there was a lot of Spanish girls out there. And then that's where I met her. And then that's where I knew the Rojo so well, because they were Spanish at the time.
Yes.
Friends of the Spanish priest. So.
Right.
Yeah. So there's always the St. Mary's connection, because when we had our first kid, the Rojos gave us their crib.
Did they really?
And then we had for Natalie for our second. Then when Monica, who used to teach here, started having grandchildren.
Yes.
We had to bring crib back. So it was always a connection. It was something with St. Mary's.
Yeah.
Yeah. And where our office is now, there was a professor who lived across the street. And she, his daughter went to the Sacred Heart, so she got a weekend pass to go to their house. I used to double date with them right across the street from where I work now.
Nice.
So, yeah. Always a connection.
Yeah. Always a connection. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
So that's how I met her. But yeah, and then she came to St. Mary's. We got married at the Sacred Heart, and Father Stewart married us.
Did he really?
Yeah. And we had our reception here at St. Mary's. So there's tons of connections at St. Mary's.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're very long-term connections.
Yeah. I remember asking Father Stewart to marry us, and he did it at the convent. We had the reception and Saga Foods did the thing. Yeah.
That's
great. Yeah.
So is there anything else that you can...
Let me see. The big thing, one thing that I always remember about St. Mary's, the 4 years I was here, was not only the change of, you know, the female or the co-ed. The other thing was the growth. You know,
so significant.
Like when people look around at this campus, like just about everything that you see here, with the exception of the tower and the library and the Sobeys building, was built in the 4 years I was here.
Right. Yeah, tremendous.
Yeah,
building.
The seniors my first year remember when there was only one building.
Right. Right.
The science building when I arrived I think was only a year or two old.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
So when I came the football stadium was being built. So for the summer games or the Canada games. And when I was home in Newfoundland the summer of 69, Trudeau was opening the games, and I can remember looking at it and said, oh my God, they finished the stadium.
Yes.
And so that was being built. I was the first one in the high rise one. This building we're sitting in now was only one floor when I first came, and the other four floors were built while I was here. The high rise one was built while I was here, and Loyola was built when I was here. Loyola opened in my fourth year, my last year.
Right, okay.
So all I can remember is walking through mud and wood, and they used to have wooden sidewalks everywhere.
Yes.
But everything, so then the, let me see, yeah, the tower, the library, and the Sobeys building, and of course the atrium.
Right.
Other than that, everything else was built while I was here.
Wow. Yeah, just amazing, yep, isn't it?
In 4 years.
In four years.
That's
now, the other thing that happened.
That's one of the reasons the Jesuits lost control.
Right.
It's because they weren't getting the federal government were pouring money into the universities like crazy,
yes,
back in the late 60s,
yeah,
early 70s. And because it was a Jesuit university, they were, the government said, well, we'll give you so much, but you have to go to the Catholic Church to get the rest. So
right,
that's where they gave up the control.
That was actually leading me into,
yeah,
one of the last questions I had was around, during your time here,
yeah,
as well, the university went secular.
Yeah.
So do you remember anything about that?
Oh, yeah, we had, yeah, because I had four, maybe three presidents while I was here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right, so you started with LaBelle, then you had Morris.
Edmund Morris was interim, and then Carrigan.
Right.
Carrigan signed my degree, so he came in. So you did notice it because the Jesuits still had, like, they still had, not control, but they still had a lot of the senior positions here. Like, after Father LaBelle left, I still think that, I don't know what they called them back then, but the dean of, Larry Corgan's position, I still think it was a Jesuit there.
Okay.
You know, but they were on their way out.
Okay.
They were given, you know, like,
yes,
you know, like, but there were still Jesuits here right up till after I graduated, but they were gradually going.
Right.
They were still here. If they were a professor, they were here as a professor.
Right.
And that,
okay,
was it. And then they started to gradually leave, but they would be kept on as chaplain or,
sure,
something like that.
Okay.
You know, back, I think, in the late 70s, early 80s, they were out of their residence there. And they had a place on Wellington Street.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, back
but
in the
just sold,
yeah,
in the last
back
year.
In the 60s, I think, the biggest Jesuit community in Canada was in Halifax.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize,
yeah,
that.
The largest English speaking,
yes,
Jesuit community was in Halifax.
Wow.
And it was all because of St. Mary's.
Yes. Yeah.
So when they lost, you know, and they were getting old, they weren't, I get it, the thing is, they weren't transferring new Jesuits in, the younger Jesuits in. The older ones were retiring.
Right.
They were at,
right,
that age. So,
yeah,
so if they were young enough to stay on as a professor, they would.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if the Jesuits wanted them at another university, they would,
yes,
send. It was up to the Jesuit, you know.
Right.
To,
okay,
you know, to send them wherever.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't really have,
yeah,
control
over
St. No.
Mary's then. Yeah. But yeah, I noticed a big difference, you know, because there was always something. You always saw the priests around.
Yes, yeah.
And then they weren't around anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a big,
yeah,
difference.
Yeah.
And when you reflect on that, do you reflect on that in kind of a sad way that,
yeah,
you didn't,
yeah,
see,
yeah,
it anymore?
I look, I had great respect for the Jesuits. I think they're fabulous. They're a teaching order. They're a great teaching order.
Yeah.
They got a great reputation. Like, you look at some of the best universities in the United States that are still run by the Jesuits.
Yes.
And they were good, you know, like, you know, all these war stories you hear about Father Hennessy,
mm,
waiting at the end of the hall and things like this.
Mm.
Yeah, he was, and he was strict, but if a kid got in trouble, mm, you know, he was the first one to,
yes,
to help, be,
yes,
there to help.
Yeah.
And when I go see the older alumni, they reflect back on the Jesuits,
yes,
more than anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
They would, wouldn't,
yeah,
they? Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like parents to them, you know. They were strict. There was no doubt about it. They were strict, but they were very, very, and good professors. They were.
Well, that's
were
right.
Great,
I mean,
professors.
From an educational,
yeah,
perspective.
Yeah. But and I still hear some of the old professors. Like when I go out and see the alumni, they'll always ask.
Yeah.
About some of the old professors.
Yes.
But the other thing, you know, when I was mentioning about the everything new being built here, like right now, we're still on the same footprint.
Yeah.
And I had an alumni came in 2 years ago, 40 years since he's been back to St. Mary's. He graduated in 69. And he said, he walked around the campus, and he said, brought back a lot of memories.
Yes.
But he said, all the new buildings,
yeah.
He said, the thing I like is, I said, well, what was there in that building? I said, yeah. Oh, an old house. So they tore down an old house,
yes.
And built a beautiful building. What was here? Oh, a little patch of woods. So they built a building.
Yeah.
But he said, it's all on the same footprint.
Yes, yes.
So I'm still at St. Mary's.
That's
and
right,
that's what
that's
he
right.
liked the best about it, you know. So he graduated in 69. That was the year, my first year here.
Yes.
So he was...
He had a really, different perspective.
Yeah.
Definitely than yours in seeing him.
But it was a big change, Bridget.
Yes.
There was not only the building going co-ed, and me, a kid from Newfoundland and St. John's being so isolated, coming in and meeting guys from all over the world.
Yes.
That was exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the internationalization of our campus has been long term from your perspective.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
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 I'll tell you a funny story, and maybe I told you this. When I was here, the Chinese students were from Hong Kong. Now they're from all over mainland China.
Oh, right. Okay? Yes, yes.
The Americans that were coming here were coming, a lot of them, to escape going to Vietnam.
Right. Yeah.
Now we have an alumni chapter in Hanoi.
Do we really?
In 40 years, yeah. And I was when I was in New York.
We have an alumni chapter in Hanoi.
And I was in New York recently, a couple of years ago, and all, you know, the New York alumni came out, and one of them was my ex-roommate.
Wow.
And somebody said to him, Mike, why did you come to St. Mary's? He said, well, I got my draft notice.
Yes.
And Coach Goodwin called me, and he said, if you come up, play basketball for St. Mary's, you'll get an education.
Yeah.
Plus, you'll get a student deferment.
Yes.
So he came. And so he said, it was St. Mary's or Vietnam.
Right.
And I said, well, the funny thing is, I just got an email on my BlackBerry from Terry Murphy, and he just did an alumni reception in Hanoi. Not that, you know. So in 40 years, look how the world has changed.
That's right.
But getting back to your question, in residence, like I said, the Chinese kids were from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
We had a lot of Caribbean students.
Yeah.
And which we still do.
Yeah.
But when I was there, there were a lot from Bermuda, which we still do, Trinidad.
Yep.
Not too much from Trinidad anymore. We had a lot of Americans from the eastern seaboards, which we don't have anymore, which, you know, I don't understand why, but we did have an awful lot of Americans.
I don't understand why either.
No, I can't figure that out because it's still a cheap education here.
That's right.
You know.
And close.
And close, very close, driving distance. And so they came from New England, particularly Boston area. We had a huge population of Boston students.
I noticed that in the yearbooks that you've given me.
And that were from that was because of the Jesuits.
Right,
see,
right.
Father Hennessy was from Boston.
Was he?
And he would go down and recruit to the Boston schools.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was a connection there.
Did
a pipeline.
He have a Boston accent?
Yeah. Yeah, he came from, he used to go into the rough areas of Boston, and he'd get a lot of kids. And,
would he?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And so there was that connection. But the kids in residence, Newfoundland, Ontario, New Brunswick, Cape Breton, but the international kids were always from the Caribbean, Hong Kong, and the eastern United States.
Interesting.
Yeah. And just about the same islands in the Caribbean that we have now.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Wow, well, what an exposure.
Oh, it was for me. You know, like you know, you're meeting kids from Boston, from St. Lucia, from, you know, all over.
It's great.
It was really something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we made friends all over all these years.
Isn't that nice?
That's nice, yeah.
Wow.
Still kept in touch with them.
I think it just underscores even more the relevance of your role as alumni director.
Yeah,
you really had these firsthand experiences with people that
and
are
that's
critical.
It does help because even the ones that graduated ahead of me, they can still share stories with me
I
can relate to.
Well, as you pointed out, you touched on both worlds.
Yeah.
You're at a time of critical change.
They can talk about Dr. Rojo, and I say, oh, yes, I see him all the time. Oh, how is he? You know, he was responsible for me getting my science degree and going to dentistry, you know, like things like
imagine,
this.
Yeah.
So you come back and
tell
them those stories, you know.
That's
they'll
right.
ask about father so-and-so and father,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting.
Oh, you've had a fabulous
But like I said, that they were four very, very exciting years, and the things we would do, you know, like
yeah.
all the sports teams were winning.
Yes.
We, you know, we were just like, we were cock of the roost. You know, nobody could beat St. Mary's. You know, like.
Yeah. You know, that's funny. I met for lunch with students today.
Yeah.
And they are soon to be alumni.
Yeah.
Graduate this year. I mean, they said that to me, that they like being from a smaller university
yes.
where their sports teams are great.
Yeah.
You know, they really, that was something that made them very proud.
Yeah,
was,
yeah. And it draws the student population together. I don't care what you say.
Yes,
it does, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, especially the football team, because the kids are new. They're just
exactly.
coming. And they need somewhere to go to get to meet people. And then when
that's
they all
right.
go to the game and paint their faces silver
yes.
colors, and have
yeah.
a few beers, that's
yeah.
a bonding thing.
It is.
And they're new, they're homesick or whatever.
Yeah.
And they come in and they get involved in that atmosphere. And
that's right.
That helps. That's what happened to me.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I remember downstairs, the student union, but there's only one floor.
Yeah.
And the remember back in the day, they had those dayliners?
Yes. Yeah.
And there was a dayliner going to St. Evex for a football game, an exhibition football game. And it was, I forget how much money, but it was your train ticket and your football ticket. So Dad said, I'm going to buy you a ticket for that. You go on that, and that's where you'll meet some friends.
Yes.
And I did.
Yeah.
He was long gone, and I went down. I said, went by myself, got on the train, met a whole bunch of guys,
yeah.
marched through downtown Antigonish from the train station to the football stadium when the Saints go marching in with the big banners and everything. And that was so thrilling to me. You know,
oh,
I couldn't
yes.
believe. And I still talk to people that I met on that train.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Your father was very smart.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've still, you know, one just died recently and I met him on the...
Wow.
Yeah, and you became good friends. And
isn't
yeah.
that wonderful?
Yeah.
Are you the only boy in your family?
Oh, no.
No.
I'm the eldest of six. I was me, two, and four sisters and a brother.
And a brother, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, what a wonderful,
yeah.
You know.
So I hope to help some.
Oh, you
yeah.
did. You gave me some great stuff.
Yeah.
Now, what I'll do is I'll be going through all of this.
Yeah.
And if
if something comes up.
Yes, I may want to just
yeah.
ask you again
yeah.
about a few things. So
yeah.
I'm just going to stop the tape.
I think I ramble on.
Oh, no, you don't at all. No, you're